This is the Game Misconduct Podcast with Don LaGreca.
And welcome to the Monday edition of Game Misconduct. I'm Don LaGreca. Monday means EJ Raddick from the NHL Network, NHL Now, 4 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time. How are you, sir?
I'm great. How are you doing today?
Good. I tweeted out, we're going to recap the weekend, but we have not had you on since the hand pass. And I figure that's probably the best way to start. And listen, anybody that's listened to this podcast, we've talked about a long time my feelings on expanding replay. I think it's very dicey. I can't just have every bad call saying, they should review that, they should review that. This one seems like a pretty easy fix, EJ. You know, it leads to a goal. Just include a hand pass the same way you would a distinct kicking motion, the same way you would an offside. I mean, I think this could be a very easy fix.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, like maybe just review all the goals. I mean, like all scoring plays. I mean, for any kind of things that could happen in them. But I mean, listen, it was a miss. There's no question about that. You know, Mark Jeanette was the referee. He was kind of blocked there. But, you know, I think he could have done a better job getting out to the goal line, you know, to get in front of that play more. But, you know, these are things that the officials, I've said many times that it's a very, very hard job. And that was a miss. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it was. I looked at it where the officials were. The only guy who had really any chance of seeing it was the linesman on the close side there, Murray. And even for him, it would have been, you know, he might have been blocked by Schwartz. So not easy.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. And I respect Larry Brooks. Of course, he's a Hall of Famer. And he suggested, like what you suggested, just making every goal reviewable. And he,
well, I don't know if he suggested that. He was talking about that the idea is problematic because, it's, you know, you'd have to look at all these things. I mean, I look at it this way. Review the things that lead up to a scoring play, and you know you're not going to go back like 2.5 minutes in the zone.
Well, yeah, see, that's the thing. He wasn't suggesting, and he was suggesting that could be dicey, just because, as you said, what are we going to go back 2.5 minutes? What I would say to that is, these video coaches for each team are outstanding. Where if there were an offside, they would have challenged it anyway. Because if you see, like, Jerry Dineen, who I've gotten to know with the Rangers, I mean, he's always right. They wouldn't right now top, now with the penalty, there's no way they're going to challenge unless they know beyond the shadow of a doubt that it's offside. And they know every time it's the team enters the zone, they look to see if it's offside or not. So I really don't even think that's an issue because it would have been challenged anyway. But if there were a hand pass or anything else, then you'd be able to detect it.
Yeah, I just think, if you review the elements around a scoring play, it gives you an opportunity to look at it. It gives you an out to evaluate it, because like the other night in that game, there was no way out. The officials, they missed it. It's not reviewable. There's nothing they can do. So by saying that you're going to review the goal, you know, all scoring plays like they do in the NFL, you know, now there's fewer scoring plays, but you know, really when you have fewer games, I guess, in the NFL more than anything else, there's
a
number of scoring plays in an NFL game, just as there are, you know, in hockey. So, I think that way you give yourself an out. You know, another idea I heard from a friend of ours, Craig Button, he said maybe just give the coaches 2 challenges each and they can challenge anything they want. And, outside of judgment call, you know, a tripping penalty or something like that, but puck over glass, which in that very same game, a puck over glass was missed. I think that's one of the easiest ones to review and get right. You know, the accidental high stick where you high stick the wrong guy or you high stick yourself and then somebody gets a penalty for it. You know, things like that I think are easy to kind of look at in video review, but you know, we're not going backwards. And the other issue too is that, you know, and I thought about it in that game, is that there's, you know, the element of gambling in hockey is growing. And because of that and because of the ability to review, I think we're going to have to, you know, you're going to have to review and look at a lot of things just because there's a lot of money at stake now, and it's the integrity of the game is at stake, you know, in those situations. So I don't think the genie is going back in the bottle. I would, if the league, you know, if the leadership was strong enough to say, hey, you know, we are okay with the offside being handled by the linesman, and you know, basically it's within the spirit of the rule to be offside by like a quarter of an inch. Maybe they decide to go on that. But again, that's something that has now we've seen that it's a number of cases when it's, you know, it's a black and white rule and it gets violated. So, I mean, it's a tough I think it's a tough thing for all the sports to deal with, and I think they're all dealing with it in their own ways. I mean, I know I watch baseball games, and I'm constantly amazed at the strike zone in baseball.
Of course.
Pretty significant, right? I mean, like, ball one, strike one in baseball at the start of a count changes the whole at bat. And so, you know, baseball is having to deal with that is, you know, over time. And, you know, with hockey, we have our challenges here, and, you know, this is certainly one of them. But I think especially because of the advent of pro sports betting, that you have to take all these things into account, and you have to be aware of the potential for you know, the look, the sniff, the smell of impropriety.
Yeah, there's no question, and hey, it comes right down to this again. As egregious a call as it was, the Blues kind of let it happen by giving up the goal in the final minute,
yeah,
right?
That's right.
All right. Otherwise, they would have won that game in regulation. And if you believe in the fallacy of the predetermined outcome, would have clinched the series yesterday afternoon with the win. And then, all right, let's say they wave off the goal. Doesn't necessarily mean the Blues win the game in overtime. The Sharks
that's
could
correct.
Score 10 seconds later. Yeah. But what has happened since then, EJ, is the Blues have really flexed their muscle. And this was a concern that we had going into the series. It's why I picked the Blues in 7. I just think the Sharks are wearing down. And you're starting to see what Carlson's injury now. Pavelski takes a hit. I'm not sure if that should be a disciplinary action, not with the hit to the head and all that. We can discuss that in a second. But you're starting to see a team that's played a lot of games. And I think the stronger, maybe a little younger team is starting to show here in the latter stages of this Western Conference final.
Well, I think at the end of the day that the, you know, it's funny. They both played almost the identical amount of games, right? I mean, San Jose has played one more game than
right.
St. Louis. St. Louis is coming off a 7-game series as well. So, you know, that's one of the things. I think when I looked at it at the start of the series, I thought that Sharks' higher-end guys were better, but the St. Louis Blues 1 through 20, their roster was deeper. And I think you're seeing that with the contributions that we're getting from the fourth line. It's been just terrific. You know, Barbashev and Sundquist and Steen, I think those guys have been a difference maker. They've been much like the fourth line for the Bruins have been throughout the playoffs this year with Corrali and company there. So, the Blues have worn the Sharks down. There's no question. There's a number of injuries now that we have to look at. I mean, you know, Erik Karlsson just looks shot. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, he doesn't have a full stride. He's obviously got some kind of groin or core issue that has been a big problem for him. He's doing the best he can. But, you know, it's just, you know, I think tomorrow night, if you play him at all, you got to play 7D, and you just have to play him on power plays, and that's it. So I don't know if that's possible, but, I mean, I just think that it's going to be a struggle for him. Joe Pavelski, I have a hard time thinking that he's coming back after what he's been through and then getting hit again. It looks like possibly concussed again yesterday. I have a hard time thinking he's going to play. I have no idea what's going to happen with Tomas Hertl. You know, he played in the game for a while after getting that hit from Barbashev, and then he retired to the locker room. So the only thing I will say, in this, you know, for the San Jose Sharks in their defense here, is that they look dead and buried after game 4 against the Vegas Golden Knights in round 1. They've got some really high-end players. They've got some high-end people. They're competitors. And, you know, I'm not going to count them out after what I saw in that series against Vegas, because they were dead
sure.
to be in that one. But they are up against it right now because they are banged up, and the St. Louis Blues are feeling it.
Yeah, they're definitely feeling it. And if they win that game or win any of the next two or either of the next two, then we'd have a rematch in 1970 with Bobby Orr flying through the air with the game-winning goal in Game 4 in overtime. And honestly, I don't want to disrespect those three teams that went to the Stanley Cup Final, but this will almost be like their first trip, right? I mean, an expansion team was going to go back then. They put all the expansion teams in the same conference, so that meant an expansion team was going to go. And the Scotty Bowman-led Blues just were a little ahead of everybody else. But, you know, so many near misses and so many great regular season teams, so many disappointments in the postseason. It would be a tremendous story. And even being in dead last January 3rd of this season, if they're able to go to the Stanley Cup Final, it would be a heck of a story.
Yeah, it just goes to show you that things can come together in a season for a team. And the arrival of Binnington has been a difference maker. You know, over the weekend, I spent the weekend in Allentown, Pennsylvania with the USA Hockey Level 4 Coaching Conference, which, you know, I was able to get my Level 4 certificate now. So that's really good for me in terms of, you know, doing my youth hockey things. But throughout the weekend, Ryan Walter was there, the former Capital and Canadian and Canuck. And he played 15 or so years in the league and won a Stanley Cup with the 86 Canadians. And he told the story of that team. And he said, really, in February of that year, he said, we were dysfunctional. And he said, for sure, we thought there was going to be a trade or a coaching change from the general manager of that team at the time, Serge Gerard. And he goes, in the end, he opted not to do anything. And he goes, between February and May, you know, all of a sudden at the end of the run, we are the Stanley Cup champions. And, you know, in that circumstance, Patrick Waugh was the young goalie that kind of came out of nowhere and led the way for the Canadians. In this case, you know, years and years later, it's Jordan Binnington who has kind of, you know, come onto the scene in January, and then the Blues have taken off. So the hockey seasons are interesting, and the ebbs and flows and how teams can find their way, and particularly now that it's so close there that, you know, the St. Louis Blues, we've done the math. They've been the best team in hockey since January the 3rd. And I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that they're one game away from going to the Stanley Cup final.
So the message is just don't fall too far out of it. I mean, if you hang in there, then you have a chance. It's a long, as you said, a long, long season. January 3rd seems like you're deep into the season because the calendar, you know, had flipped over. So there's still a lot of hockey to be played after that. And the Blues took advantage of it and now are five wins away from winning their first ever Stanley Cup. And their wait's Boston, amazing. You know, similar to all these other teams that had to wait. It probably is good for Boston to get some rest here, right? Because they got a lot of older players. Chara looks like he'd be ready for the final, which now officially is going to start next Monday, a week from today.
Yeah.
You know, Krejci's been around for a while. Marchand's been around for a while. There were five players, EJ. I think four or five players that were actually on that 09 team that last played Carolina. So it just shows you there's a lot of length there. I mean, there's guys like Carlo and McAvoy. They've got younger players, but, you know, they've got a lot of older players that probably are going to use this week plus off to their advantage.
Well, it's a lot of time.
Yeah.
It is a lot of time. They're going to miss, I think, 11 days between when they played last and the cup final. I think the last six teams that have had a long layoff or a longer layoff than their opponent have all lost. So, you know, including the Bruins in 2013, they had a longer layoff than the Blackhawks that year. So we'll see how it plays out. But, I mean, if indeed we're to get a Blues-Bruins final, I mean, the teams are very similar. They're deep teams with experienced guys at the top of their clubs, and I mean the biggest difference is that the Bruins have an experienced goaltender that's been there in Tuukka Rask, and the Blues have a rookie in Jordan Binnington, but you know he's been anything like a rookie. And you know, a funny side note to that is if these two teams play, Jordan Binnington played some games for the Providence Bruins last year as part of being loaned out. I mean, that's how far off the depth chart
right.
he was with the Blues. So I mean, there is some familiarity with Jordan Binnington with some of those younger players probably in Boston and some of that organization that stretches back, you know, into Providence. So they'll have a little bit of a book on Binnington, and they saw him earlier in the year, and, you know, he was excellent against them, certainly in the game in St. Louis when the Blues were able to win that one, I believe, in a shootout 2-1.
Yeah, so we're looking forward to it. And, of course, we got the game Tuesday for Game 6, and we'll see if there'll be a Game 7, hoping there'll be, just from a fan standpoint. And all that plays into that'd be something if the Sharks do come back, right? I mean, how many teams have you seen play 21 games before they even get to the Stanley Cup Final? Yeah. That would just be an unbelievable story.
That's Rangers-like. I mean, that's like the Tortorella Rangers where it had all those Game 7s, I believe.
Yeah, just could not finish teams off, and it ended up costing them. It did.
Uh-huh.
Cost them in 2012 in the conference final. I thought the Devils, who had played less games, they had to go 7 in the first round, but just went 5 against Philadelphia in round 2. And those, that doesn't sound like a lot, but those two extra games less, you know, it can definitely help. And let's not forget, too, as you mentioned before, just one extra game for the Sharks compared to the Blues, but just the heavy lifting of coming back from 3-1 down and all the overtime games that they played. I mean, they probably played an extra game just from the amount of overtime that they had played just to be able to get through.
Probably.
So, you know, so it's crazy. All right, come other news and notes before we get to the tweets. John Davidson, I guess no surprise, is the new president of the New York Rangers. And I've been assured by my connections there that he's fitting in naturally. He's not going to come in here and start making changes. He's simpatico with what has already been planted in there with Gorton and Drury, and Schoenfeld steps down. So the era of Glenn Sather is now over, and John Davidson, I've been assured, is going to fit in. I guess there was some concern that, you know, because he had some success in Columbus, that he might want to do his own thing, but it sounds like he's on the same page.
Well, I think John, you know, he knows the circumstance of the players because you know, he's had familiarity with the franchise going way back, right? So he knows kind of what's going on. I think that he will come in, he will evaluate, you know, and see how this rebuild is continuing to go. And I think if there's any bumps in the road or any concerns, you know, he will. I think, you know, guys do like to put their imprint or their stamp on things in some way. And I'm sure that there'll be a, you know, a couple of people that might be out there that he thinks are good fits to be within the Ranger organization in some capacity. So I guess we'll see how that plays out. But I think he's a smart enough guy to know that you got to come in and evaluate the situation up close. He hasn't had the ability to evaluate it up close now in a while. So, you know, but I think it was no surprise. I think that's the guy they wanted. I think they had targeted him and, you know, for a long time. And I know these things, you know, who knows what gets discussed with who. There's always, you know, back channel things that happen. That's just the real world we live in. And I'm not surprised at all that he's coming in. And, you know, we wish him all the best. I mean, John Davidson has been a, you know, a franchise, you know, a big figure in that franchise's history back to when he was a, led the Rangers on a great run in 1979 with some terrific goaltending. And then, you know, afterwards for several, what, a couple, two and a half decades as the play, as the color guy along with Sam Rosen on their TV broadcast. Sure. So fans are very, very familiar with him. And I think he'll come in and he's got some good experience now. He was in St. Louis and Columbus, so he's an experienced executive coming into the situation in New York.
And there's nothing wrong with having someone that the fans absolutely adore to kind of forward your message, right? And, you know, Jeff Gorton's a hockey guy, and he's not bad on the air at all. Chris Drury, they've kind of kept somewhat protected. He hasn't really been out there since taking over, you know, as part of their regime there with the Rangers. But, you know, JD will go on the shows. He'll handle the press conferences because, you know, I do think that you can turn things over fairly quickly in sports now, EJ. I think the five-year plan, those don't exist anymore. Even the three-year plan is starting to go away. I mean, you hit the reset button, you're expected to win, you know, within the next couple of years. But if this does end up being a little bit slower, and it doesn't sound like they're going to go and dive directly into big-name free agents, although Panarin may be something that falls into their lap, you know, if you are going to go a couple of more years of missing the playoffs, this isn't a bad face to put on that. You know, to kind of sell your fans on, hey, we're moving in the right direction. I think that's also very much a part of sports nowadays, right?
Yeah. I think that that's a part of it. But, you know, he is someone that is, as you mentioned, I think pretty beloved by the fans here. And if things go well, he'll continue to be beloved. If things go less than well, then I guess we'll have to see how that plays out.
Exactly.
You know, I guess they seem like they're very much on the right page, what they're doing with all the draft picks and prospects. Now they got to turn those draft picks into guys that can help them win on the ice. And certainly having the second overall pick is going to go a long way to doing that.
Sounds like Patrick Waugh is going to be a candidate for the Senators head coaching job. Your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, it'd be interesting, right? Because you have an owner there and Eugene Melnyk, who's kind of a, you know, I guess to be kind, just to say he's a character. And, you know, financially, I've wondered in the last couple of years if he has the wherewithal to really to run that thing as you'd like. I think he's been holding on until the franchise can get a new facility maybe built in the downtown Ottawa area, which has been the talk over the last couple of years of a possibility of that happening. And which, if it did, it would certainly raise the value of the team in any kind of sale. But, you know, as for Patrick Waugh, I mean, Patrick likes to be in control, and Eugene is a unique guy himself. So, you know, that's the way it goes. I mean, we'll see. I'll be curious to see, you know, how if that happens, I mean, how it'll work. Patrick had success in his first year as a coach in Colorado. He have a lot of young players, certainly, in Ottawa to work with. But, you know, he's a big name, and, you know, the Ottawa Senators, I mean, the way things have gone there the last couple of years, they could certainly, you know, maybe, you know, a big name who is willing to go there would be helpful in their quest to get better over the next couple of years.
And, who knows? And for people that don't know their Canadian geography, you know, there's so much about the rivalry between the Canadians and the Maple Leafs, and really, that's just because they're original six teams. Ottawa and Montreal are like an hour and a half apart. I mean, they're very, very close. So I'm sure there's a lot of people in Ottawa that might have grew up Canadiens fans, that kind of converted to Senator fans because it was in their community. I think he'd have a lot of cachet there in Ottawa because it's been stale there for a while, right, EJ? I mean, they kind of reminded me of the New Jersey Devils of Canada, right? They're a little too close to Montreal and Toronto, and you know, they're not quite the, you know, have the following of the other big Canadian cities. They've been good, but not, you know, not great for a while. And to get a little shot in the arm probably wouldn't be a bad idea to get the fans going there a little bit.
Yeah, I think that would make them a little more relevant, you know, with having Patrick there. I don't know if it would, you know, make them necessarily a better team on the ice and help their rebuilding, but it would certainly make them more relevant in the conversation to have Patrick Waugh being there.
Yeah, and if you're trying to get a new building and stir fans up.
He likes to run the show. So, I mean, if they're going to bring Patrick in, they're going to have to be willing to pay him, and they're going to have to be willing to allow him the autonomy to be involved in a lot of different things. So we'll see if anything comes of it.
All right, let's go to your the tweets at Don LaGreca, hashtag okay. Game Misconduct, and a couple of people, Andrew, Mario, still kind of gravitating towards, with JD being the president, does this give the Rangers a better chance to get Panarin?
Well, it's hard to say. I mean, really, the team that has the best chance to get Panarin is the place that he wants to go, right?
Yeah, well, the Rangers have been rumored before, so.
Yeah, I mean, if he wants to come to New York, which is highly possible, I don't think that I don't think there's any, like, you know, I think he's familiar with Davidson, so that's good. I think Davidson's familiar with what, you know, the agent is looking for, so that's good. So, you know, that familiarity certainly helps. But if the player is got a place in his mind that he'd like to go, then I don't know if any of that matters. Now, the Rangers have some cap room. They have, you know, it's an attractive place to play, obviously, certainly for someone like Panarin, who's already talked about the idea of maybe playing in a bigger market. So he played in Chicago to start his career. There's been some talk about, you know, the Joel Quenneville connection in Florida. Would that be a place? I think that's more of a likely place for Bobrovsky than Panarin. Are these guys still tied to each other? I don't necessarily think that's true. I think they've got to do both, I think, find the best deals for themselves in whatever market it is. They are represented by the same guy now, so that, you know, that's part of the equation as well.
Well, that's the way of sports, you know, right? Look what's happening with the Jets, right? You find out that that Gase has the same agent as the quarterback, and the quarterback has the same agent as who's rumored to be the next GM. It's like, so that seems to be the way of the world now.
Yeah, that's kind of crazy. So, but we'll see. I mean, I think that those connections to Panarin, I don't think will hurt John Davidson.
I don't know if they help, though.
If the Rangers are going to be a suitor, I don't know if they're any huge help either. I think that there's familiarity, but all the managers have familiarity with the different agents, you know, and some have, you know, really good relationships with the different guys. So Panarin seems like he's going to market. I think the Rangers are certainly an attractive place, and they have the wherewithal to make it happen. But it just depends upon if they want to accelerate that rebuild to that stage, or they feel like that they're comfortable moving, you know, at a different pace.
Chris wants to know what a second Stanley Cup championship cement Patrice Bergeron for a Hall of Famer.
I think he's kind of a Hall of Famer now, but you know, I think I guess you want to say would cement it. Sure, having a second Stanley Cup. I just think he's been such a really terrific player for such a long time. I mean, you got to go back to the 2003 draft when he came into the league and dealt with some concussion issues. You remember some pretty significant ones early in his career, and he's just gone on to have an unbelievable career. So, you know, for me, I see him as a Hall of Famer now, but certainly winning a second Stanley Cup would go a long way to moving him forward in that regard.
Now, Brett has an interesting tweet because it was thrown out to me. I don't know if it was Brett or somebody else last week to give my Mount Rushmore of hockey play-by-play announcers. And I couldn't come up with a fourth. All right. Doc Emmerich to me, definitely. I put Gary Thorne there because, you know, growing up a Devil fan, but also he called some big games when ESPN and ABC had the rights, and I thought he and Bill Clement made a great team, and there's a lot of fans that still resonates with them. And I put Bob Cole, you know, the longtime announcer. Him and Harry Neal were great doing Hockey Night in Canada. Any problem with those three? Anybody else you would add, or could you think of a fourth?
I would absolutely have as my first guy Dan Kelly.
There you go.
I mean, Dan Kelly to me, I mean, I'm a little older than you, but
Dan, yeah, that Kelly, I miss Dan.
He was the voice of hockey in the U.S. for a bunch of years there in the 70s and 80s, and obviously prior to that in St. Louis. So, you know, Dan Kelly was, I mean, like I said, growing up when I grew up, Dan Kelly was the guy. So, I mean, Doc Emrick to me would be certainly on that list. I don't really have a big problem with Gary Thorne or Bob Cole. I mean, there's been a lot of guys that are great. I mean, I think you'd have to consider maybe Foster Hewitt just because of the history involved there.
Before our time, for sure.
Yeah.
Maybe
yeah.
not you, but definitely me.
No, me too, Donnie. But, you know, he is a legendary figure in play-by-play broadcasting and Hockey Night in Canada. So, I mean, there's a number of guys who do a great job. I mean, as I've said to you many times, I think you do a terrific job calling the game. So, you know, and just keep getting better and better.
Well, thank you. And I just felt uncomfortable giving, like, current announcers. Listen, Kenny's fantastic. I've always been a big fan of John Weidman. I think he does a great job, too. So, anyway, Brett tweeted, would I consider Chuck Caton? And do I have any good Chuck Caton stories? And as much as I really loved the Carolina run, it bothered me that Chuck wasn't involved in it. And I really thought he was done dirty by what happened there in Carolina. But I've said that, you know, a while ago, so we can forget that. But you know, any good Chuck Caton stories other than the fact that John Forslund does an amazing impression of Chuck Caton,
yes,
which is great.
He does a good Chuck Caton.
You know, I've got a few. But the one that I remember the most is, for me, I was in the NICU with my twins, and I spent a lot of time there trying to watch as much hockey as I could on my iPad. Unfortunately, you know, you got to have a real strong signal to watch, otherwise it buffers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I listened to a lot, and the Oilers and Hurricanes were in Edmonton, so I was listening to Chuck's call. So I just kind of text him, explain my situation, you know, hey, I just had twins and I'm listening to you. And he immediately got back to me. It wasn't even like after the game. It was like during play almost. And that's tough for a guy that does games by himself, you know, and just so happy for me. And anytime I went out there, he was the go-to interview. And I know he was the one that inducted Sam Rosen in just a couple of years ago because he's the guy that puts all that stuff together for the Hall of Fame. But my memories of Chuck as an announcer, just salt of the earth guy, always helpful, always fun to talk to. It's really a shame he couldn't have been a part of that Hurricanes run this year.
Yeah, Chuck is a terrific guy. I'm doing that broadcast for so long. I think, you know, it's funny you mentioned that game. I think I remember that game. I think that, like, Cam Ward, like, stood on his head.
Yes.
And got them. The reason I remember it is that we pick the games every day, right, on the NHL Network. We do what we call the shootout. And there was 11 games on the schedule that day, and I had gotten all 10 right leading up to that game. And I had, so I'm watching it intently that night, and I think I must have selected the Oilers to win, and Cam Ward was the difference. I mean, he made like 50-something saves in the game, and the Oilers ended up losing to the Hurricanes on that particular night. But that's what, it's odd that would be the game that you were listening to on the radio.
Yes.
But Chuck, yeah, he's been a great broadcaster for a long time. And who knows, maybe he'll, you know, turn up again somewhere else. I know he's still interested in doing it if the right opportunity comes along.
Now, how about this, just to show you that hockey and game misconduct can bring people together, at least from a friendship standpoint, Tom P. Sports, who always tweets about the Blackhawks, got together at a Yankee game recently with Courtney, the Ranger fan, and and they went to a Yankee game and watched it together. So I don't know if something's going there, or whether they're just friends, or you know, well, I don't know. I mean, maybe we can help that along. They look pretty cozy in the picture. You know, I'll retweet it for everybody right now if you want to take a look at it, and that would be something if game misconduct were to lead to two people getting together.
Maybe we could go to the wedding if it ever.
I would think an invitation would be a foregone conclusion.
Yes.
Yeah, I almost think we should be in the wedding when you think about it. I don't know how many friends Tom has or how big a party he wants to put together, but come on.
Well, what about Courtney's friends?
Well, I mean, to be in the wedding, I don't want to be a bridesmaid.
I could see you as a bridesmaid.
Really? Okay. I think she could do a lot better, to be honest with you. Tom, keep us informed. If this is just a friendship, we won't push it. But you know, if there's a chance for it to blossom,
we like the people to listen. We like friendship.
Yeah, there's
nothing wrong with friendship. But if it developed beyond that, you know, it'd be like just interesting to know about it. And
that's it. Just keep us informed.
Invited.
That's all I ask.
And the whole thing. You know, maybe name future children after us. That'd be lovely.
Well, Courtney, Tom, keep us informed, okay? More to come.
They're sitting there listening, and they're going, I mean, I just went to the game.
Yeah. Oh, I can just – we'll find out. Believe me, there'll be a tweet tomorrow, EJ. Text me. I'll let you know. I'll forward all the information to you for sure. All right. We'll know the matchup by next Monday. Monday actually starts game one, so I know you'll be traveling, so you'll be in Boston. Can you carve out a little time for us Monday?
I'll be in Boston. I think I can.
Okay.
We'll figure it out.
All right. We'll definitely figure it out. All right, have fun, buddy. I'll talk to you later.
All right, you got it, Donnie.
All right, that's the great EJ Raddick, NHL Now. And, of course, they'll be traveling for the Stanley Cup Final as well. So keep it tuned to the NHL Network for everything EJ over the next couple of weeks as the Stanley Cup Final will begin Monday from Boston, either against the Blues or the Sharks. Either way, it will begin in Boston on Monday. So no game tonight. This would have been a game between the Bruins and the Hurricanes, but that's over. So tomorrow we'll get you a nice preview for that game, get a little information about that. Just get you started out for what is going to be a game six, where the Blues have a chance to go to the final for the first time since 1970, and the Sharks trying to force a game seven back in San Jose on Thursday. So we'll see how it all works out. Back with you again tomorrow. Thanks for everybody tweeting. Always great. If you want to get in touch with me, easy way to do it is at Don LaGreca, hashtag Game Misconduct. Talk to you again tomorrow. This was the Monday edition of Game Misconduct.
Thanks for listening to the Game Misconduct Podcast. Looking for more Don LaGreca? Hear him on the Michael K. Show weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. on 98.7 ESPN in New York and worldwide on the ESPN app. And don't forget to subscribe to the Game Misconduct Podcast on the ESPN app, Google Play Music, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.